Leftover lasagna.
Leftover lasagna.
Lasagna, no way.
It's a type of sandwich.
Some kind of gross pasta.
Leftover lasagna is a podcast by Nitin Sundar and Tony Uncle. Leftover lasagna.
Very funny name.
Hello and welcome to Leftover Lasagna, which is in episode 7 currently, I believe.
Tala for a reason.
What an entry. That on the last episode, we got tons of feedback and very, very happy feedback, right? And I believe we are extremely grateful to all our listeners for sending in the kindest of comments.
Absolutely. I think we should read out a few of those comments, which I'm not trying to pull out.
Famously, rule number one of the internet is never read the comments, right? Except if they are good or you've made it up. Yeah. I think it started with Prashant, DP, right? And then sort of the final hurrah was put forward by your brother. Every time you sort of put content out in the world like we do, you are essentially putting out a little bit of yourself, little bit of vulnerability out there. So it is always like extremely gratifying when, you know, some validation comes your way. And also when they tell you, actually your first three episodes were crap. now it's on par, which means there is a progress.
But which also makes it tough for us because we actually don't know what the recipe was in the last two episodes that people liked. So we're not very sure if we'll be able to replicate it. But we at least know we did something right at some point in the middle. So
we did something right at some point.
I managed to finally find some of the feedback buried in Twitter. So this person called Foolish Samurai, at Foolish Samurai on Twitter, goes by the name Sreek. Yeah. He said banger of an Sreek episode that. And that he might write a thread very soon about an episode of Leftover Lasagna. Yeah, can you believe that? Huh? That's so cool. Yeah, and he coined the phrase civilizational privilege, which was a very pithy way to say stuff that we were trying to say with very long words or long sentences on the podcast.
Yeah, and then this is actually my classmate from school, by the way. His name is Srika.
Oh,
thanks, Srika.
Thank you, Srika. Yes, for going to the same school as Tony, because that's why you discovered this podcast. Where are your other classmates, Tony? Why are they not sending us feedback?
Yeah.
This is Pratik Mathur, who said, regular listener of Bits and Pieces. Yeah, who I guess consumes Bits and Pieces in the audio format. So he was very happy to see faces.
No, he consumes this also in the audio format. Just that we put out a reel promoting.
That is true.
And then he saw us. And he also had an eloquent way of phrasing it, which was pretty cool.
I'm so used to your voices that it seems my friends from the podcast are doing playback for the people on the screen, which is, nice. Deep way to say it, because he's used to the voices and suddenly he's seeing some faces and he's like,
if we are voicing face, over someone. Munjepar, as you
would say. Munjepar.
Your face.
Yeah. and lots of other nice comments from friends, from family, Naveen Madhavan, Mithun Sundar. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah.
Please spread the
Prashant
word.
Prashant DP. And, yeah.
Of course.
No, thank you so much. So on a previous episode of the podcast, we mentioned my brother, whose name is Sachin. And we are also recording on Sachin Tendulkar's birthday, one day after my birthday. And the last comment that has come in was from your brother, right, Mithun. And if out of the four of us, you had to pick out one person that you want to party with, I would pick your brother, right?
Yeah.
I think he's way cooler than you are, right? Like, and if I were to pick one person who was like actually sort of contented with life, I would pick my brother, right? So, who is at this point, as of when I last met him, has turned down like three promotions to stay exactly where he is in his career. Right. And that was meant to be the segue into some of what we are discussing today. Right. What are we discussing today?
Well, I just want to say you picked out your favorite party goer and your favorite most contented person. But the person with whom you want to create content amongst the four of us.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Take that. Bloody brothers.
Only because you're willing to do the edits. So what is our conversation topic for today?
The broad contours of today's discussion are going to be around corporate culture and corporate hustle culture, specifically the way we see it manifested around ourselves, specifically on the world famous social network known as LinkedIn, where we see people put themselves out. It's basically about what work has come to mean and how people have very different personas that they bring to work.
I feel like LinkedIn is a good place to start, right? Because it is, it's like a social media. It is basically like one-way Tinder, right? Like the people who are interested in connecting with someone, it's not reciprocal, right? You always want to level up. Like you're not looking to connect with people, you know, you want to hire or whatever. You're aspirationally looking at what I can be and therefore connecting with someone, right? And it is in some ways really weird because at the start, the way LinkedIn would send a default message when you try to add a connection was your most famous, is it New Yorker? The cartoon line, right?
The exact line, of course, which we have all read many times is, hi, I'd like to add you to my professional network on LinkedIn. This, of course, is the general line with which all your friends requests or connection requests on LinkedIn go out. So New York Times has this thing called the cartoon caption contest, which they run from time to time. And it's a very interesting contest, right? So they ask their readers to send in a caption which the readers feel can fit in for multiple different panels of the comic. And we all know the New Yorker cartoon is basically a single panel comic. Right? It's some pithy observation. It has two or three characters in it typically. And there's one line below it, right? Yeah. It's the most simple form of a cartoon, really. And the contest is, can you come up with a caption that fits in with as many of our cartoon panels as possible? And this LinkedIn intro message won the contest a few years back. And there are some very funny cartoon panels that they put with this caption where it seemed to fit. So in one of them, there are two prehistoric human beings sitting inside a cave around a fire and a woolly mammoth walks in. The caption below reads, I'd like to add you to my professional network.
Professional network.
Yeah. And on another one, there is a person standing against a wall and he's facing the firing squad, which is taking aim and it's about to shoot him. And there's an executioner standing nearby. The caption is, hi, I'd like to add you to my professional network. In that sense, is actually the most viral or the most social of social networks, because typically in if you want to hit the follow button, let's say on Twitter, right, you tend to be very,
judgy.
Judgy and stingy about whether you would give someone your follow or not, because follow is the biggest currency, of course.
Ratio. There was this thing called the Jesus ratio, which is that how many people do you follow versus how many people follow you. Jesus had a 1 to 12 ratio. So that is an aspirational one that you want to get to.
Interesting. So, yeah, and Twitter, I think, is the only social network where that number really mattered.
Can we just
On LinkedIn, what I was trying to say is on LinkedIn, it actually doesn't matter because how many people you follow, it's not really even a metric that's put out. And LinkedIn, the whole philosophy of LinkedIn is simple, right? You want to go and be in as many tables as possible. Because you want to see who else is at that table, but to see who else can those people bring to the table, literally.
Is it the corporate ladder to get a chair in office? Tables, ladders, and chairs.
And snakes.
Snakes.
Yeah.
But a word on Twitter, right, is that when Elon Musk took over, we thought it would die out pretty soon, right? And we thought ineptitude, etc., etc. But little did we realize, standing on 24th April 2024, that it would just be look between X and Y on your keyboard. Like, what is this? This is literally that point in the curve where Twitter has become more cringe than LinkedIn, which is saying something, right? Because initially, LinkedIn was just about adding people till they realized, like, if you want to monetize LinkedIn as a platform, you need to be able to put in ads. Right. And the only way ads work is that if you can dilute the context so much that an ad doesn't feel unnatural in your feed.
Right? Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you're able to stuff your feed with garbage, then ads seem like a better alternative or like something that you're willing to put up with. Which is
it's
what
native,
LinkedIn...
Native advertising, yeah. Right? So you layer in the garbage in with the original garbage, which is your feed. So yeah. Good strategy there.
Also a tagline for leftover lasagna. But the point being that that was when LinkedIn became very successful, right? When people started writing absolute inane garbage. I think there's that one famous culmination of every story on LinkedIn, right?
Yes.
Which is that I was on my way to an interview and then I saw a dog that was injured. And finally, the interviewer is the dog, right? Do you remember this? This has come from someone called Lumko Solvangle. So the story goes, yesterday I was walking to an interview. There was a starving dog on the road. I stopped to feed him and missed the interview. The next day, I got a call asking to come in to do the interview. I was surprised, but I went. Then the interviewer came in. He was the dog, right? So...
Yeah, this is in a sense invokes Dilbert, where one of the colleagues is Dogbert, and he's actually a dog.
Okay.
So, and then there was this other one, right, where someone is trying to show how careful they are with spending on company resources. So they're traveling on a meeting or something, and they're staying in a hotel, and he gets a chicken and he puts it inside toaster to heat it up, as opposed to going to a restaurant and expensing his meal. this is of course a made-up story, but the irony with LinkedIn is, if you actually open LinkedIn at any time and just start reading out the garbage that is written there by people, it's not very off some of these stories, which are obviously crazy stories. That reality is not that under-exaggerated compared to these when it comes to LinkedIn, and that's the funny thing. I don't know how it became this, or why it became this, or why it works, more importantly. Right. Aren't people able to see through this kind of stuff? So the simplest analogy I can think of, right, for LinkedIn is, you know how nowadays in schools, right, every kid gets an award, or every kid participates in your annual day event, for instance. It's obviously to spur more participation, to take away the pressure of performance from kids and everything, which is good. All of that is fine. But typically, if there is an annual day performance, all the parents come. They all sit through that entire program, which typically would then go on for 5 hours, because every single child in the grade is now going to perform, right? Yeah. And it's not nice to not sit through for every kid, because if you don't sit and watch some other kid's performance, then their parents are not going to sit and create an audience for your kid's performance. So everyone is politely clapping.
You know what this is? It is kid pro quo. Kid pro quo.
That's exactly what it is. I think that's what LinkedIn is, right? People keep posting these cringe posts, right, about their hustle culture, about how they've transformed their lifestyle, about their, you know, very proud to announce that I have won the, fourth prize in annual tug-of-war lemon and spoon race at our sports day.
There will be a management lesson from Lemon and Spoon.
Of course.
Or a management lesson from Marcus Stoinis hitting the winning runs for Lucknow Super Giants against Chennai Super Kings, right? And I think to come back to where you started off, it is just that corporate speak is so different from how we like normally talk, right? And LinkedIn is just an extension of that persona where you know it is inauthentic, right? Like how you write on LinkedIn is not how you talk to anyone. Like if it is, then I mean, you're probably the most boring person on the planet, right? And we all seem to be in agreement that this is like a necessary evil, right? Like it is okay. It is something that we can deal with.
We all wear those. I think it comes from the way we dress up, right? Like we are told to dress up a certain way when we go to work. Obviously now that's changing, like people are like casual at work and everything. But if you actually look at it, the way people casually dress up at work is also different from the way they normally casually dress up. Like on a weekend, they would not be dressed up the way they... Yeah. Because there's always some distinction that's happening, right? Like all the time. From the way you groom yourself, the way you dress up, the way you show up at work, everything, there is a tinge of, I don't know if I'd call it artifice, but it's like people have two different personas. There is a work persona which they wear, don from 9 to 5 or 9 to 7 or whatever. And then there's another persona which takes over. And people aren't very comfortable also letting these two personas melt. Right?
So a good tagline for LinkedIn would be dress up for the job you want, right? So dress up your stories, dress up, you know, everything for the job you want. But in actuality, in reality, LinkedIn can just be summarized by its most popular comment, right? Which is C for BR. Which is commenting for better reach, right?
Yeah. And, can you please explain what commenting? Let's unpack what C4BR is.
The origin of this is obviously that social media platforms at some point sort of started focusing on engagement as a good metric to see what posts you want to see more of. Originally, it would have been like something like likes or whatever. But then maybe like if you want to be a platform that encourages conversation, maybe comments are a better metric. Right? So if there are more comments on a particular post, then it should show up more often in the timeline. Right? And then people have no value to add, but they are sort of just, you know, pasting a comment which says C4BR, right? Commenting for better reach, which has then been abbreviated either as CFBR or C4BR.
Yeah.
So, yeah, why do people do this? You just want to look like a generally helpful person? Is that it?
I guess so. I don't have anything better to add. Not on your point. I'm saying I'm speaking as the people who put C4BR. They don't have anything more useful to add to the original post.
Let us say you are the kind of person who comments C4BR on LinkedIn. Right? It is likely that in your sort of network of LinkedIn, there is probably a relevant person you can tag or some comment you can add to say, you know what, you know, check out this or try out this thing. Maybe it'll help you, right?
Yeah.
It's probably a little bit more considered to say, I really actually want to help you. As opposed to C4BR, which is like the minimum
viable product when it comes to a comment.
But also be seen as a helpful person, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That is important. Like if you just hit a organic retweet on Twitter, it doesn't show up that you've done anything, right? But if you put C4BR, it shows Nitin Sundar has commented C4BR.
As with everything on when it comes to social media, right? I blame Facebook for this culture. And I'll tell you why. When we were kids, and I mean, our generation is probably a little messed up in that way because around the time we went from being, you know, adolescents, college kids into work people is when social media really exploded, right? Your age.
This is true.
My age group. So we actually don't know if we changed as people or, you know, the internet changed the way we were, right? I don't know if the phenomenon of growing up was entirely organic to us or it is something that was also conditioned by the changes in the internet. But what happened around the time, you know, we all got on Facebook was when I was in school or even my early college years, I had a few friends. I would know when their birthdays were, right? And then I go on Facebook. And on Facebook, suddenly you have 500 friends, right? And you don't even know most of them. You've not been in touch with most of them. But maybe at some stage in life, you met someone and you added them on Facebook. Now, if you have 500 people in your network, and there are only 365 days in the year, roughly every day, nearly two people are going to be celebrating a birthday, right? In your network. Now, how do you stay authentic and keep wishing two people every single day of the year
visibly
on their birthday?
Yeah.
You can't, right? And Facebook realized that there's a problem. So what did they do? They automatically created that comment, right? Wish your friend blah, 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 happy birthday. And then they took it one step further. They would even fill out the comment for you. Happy birthday, XYZ. You just had to hit post. Now, if you go to their timelines on their birthdays, you would see like 300 comments of exactly the same text again and again and again.
Yeah.
At that, when this first started, people were like, but this is so inauthentic, right? This is not the way anybody should be wishing someone a happy birthday. But over a couple of years, this became so normalized that we were okay with this. That is what really sowed the stage for many years it'd be okay to say CFBR and fuck off right on LinkedIn. Because who cares? That's it.
There was a point when like you also felt the pressure to do it, right? Like you can't be the only person not wishing, right? Like so you're like, okay, let me. Now it's died out, I'm guessing. But LinkedIn, yeah, I don't know, get happy birthday messages. Yeah, I mean, as someone who celebrated his birthday yesterday, I realized that I had forgotten to take it off on LinkedIn, that it is my birthday. Yeah. And LinkedIn does this, right? It basically lets you wish and also the response. Oh. So they give you three variants of how I can respond to a happy birthday wish, right? Which is pretty cool. Yeah. So we're saying casual business and causal business. So you're saying Facebook is the cause for all of this nonsense.
Absolutely. Fair. Yeah. I'm just going to randomly read a couple of things that I saw on LinkedIn today. This is someone's, I don't even remember whose profile, because as part of this podcast, I just opened LinkedIn to see what is being typed out there. So I'm just going to read out some stuff. With over 15 years of experience in handling growing businesses and working with industry leaders, I have developed valuable insight into the factors that contribute to their success. Now, why is this of any use to me? Like, you and why they are becoming successful. Why is this your LinkedIn update? Something. I've just written it.
I actually blame Chris Srikanth for this. Success in life video.
And as I said earlier, take up the responsibility and just do it. You will be successful. You will find solutions to all your problems and you'll become very successful in life.
This problem is to be blamed on Chris Srikanth. Here is another one. Okay, I'm not going to name this person. Someone that I know. Lost 5+ kg so far this month. Some would be excited, but I am disappointed. While shifting to a new country and a new role has been challenging, I am disappointed in myself for going through these cycles of gaining and losing weight. Short-term achievements are often more visible and therefore celebrated. Long-term consistency often goes unnoticed, but this is where the magic happens. I know someone in my office who has been at the same weight, +/-2 kg, for the last 20 years. That is much more commendable than gaining 10 kgs and then losing it in 3 months every other year. And there are 18 likes to this and 7 comments. Which,
this is on LinkedIn.
I don't know what to say. This is on LinkedIn. And it fits in, right? Like, nobody's actually calling out, correct, what crap are you writing? Like, why are you saying junk? And that's what really gets me. Nobody goes and says, hey, stop bullshitting. Like, nobody cares. Somebody stays the same weight for 20 years. That is not a big achievement. Now, don't spur him to go and put this on his CV, whoever that person is. Nobody calls
it out. This again goes back to what we originally said, that 100% of podcast listeners love the podcast, because if you're not interested in it, you won't listen to it, right? Same thing applies to LinkedIn. Like, the only people who are interested, what do you mean?
I disagree. The others are doing CFBR. The others actually aren't interested. They're commenting for better reads. That's it.
How many of the 7 comments on this post are CFBR? It is not.
Now I have to go back and find out the post. But
I think LinkedIn is, in that sense, the lowest hanging fruit.
My last closing comment on LinkedIn is how this is the place where we are trying to present our most professional, polished selves, which is potentially going to get us better jobs or better business or better connections, potentially a better life. And this is what we choose to project there, which that dichotomy is just quite something, isn't it?
In the time and age that we're living in, if you're saying that you have so many connections on Facebook or LinkedIn, it also means that for any given opportunity, there are going to be like n number of similar looking CVs with jargon that sounds exactly the same. And then how do you distinguish, right? So I guess the idea is to create an authenticity to yourself so you stand out, right? And the main ingredient of authenticity is a little bit of vulnerability plus introspection, right? Now, your friend who has commented this is basically saying that, you know, I know all these things, right? That short-term gains and like award-winning campaigns are probably not what makes a difference to work, right? I understand that there are long-term minor increments that you need to keep adding. See, like, amazing. If you are sort of looking for a role, he's like slightly signaling that I am the kind of person that understands all this. Right?
Thanks for explaining this to me. I'm blown away by the authenticity that was hidden, my bloody eyes, which
unseen,
not capable. The unseen layers to this. Thanks for peeling out
unseen
the layers.
Unseen layers in the scene putting.
Yeah.
I'm not able to gauge the level of sarcasm in your comment, but this is, yeah. No, I mean, in some senses, that is what content creators do, right? Like, what we do also is a version of that only, except on a different platform.
Okay, all right. If you say so.
The reason that we decided to do this topic, and there are two layers to this, is that someone basically tweeted, do you remember Flappy Bird guy who, you know, randomly took his app off the internet because, like, it was very distracting. And in the process, chose to not make money, right? And yeah. What a terrible decision that is, right?
So Flappy Bird, for people who have forgotten internet 7-8 years back, is this game where you press just two keys on your keyboard to keep a bird flying, and the bird needs to go through certain hoops and stuff.
Which two keys should I look between on my keyboard to keep
Flappy Bird? Oh my god. oh man. Yeah.
If there is one book that you would pick out as your favorite book of all time, I think I can guess which one it is. It would probably be Catch 22, right? No?
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's definitely in the top five or so. Yeah.
And I don't know how many books Joseph Heller has written. It's not too much, right?
I've read one more book called Franny and Zooey. I don't think I've read anything else by him. Yeah.
So the reason I mentioned Joseph Heller is that there is this amazing story, right? Is that Joseph Heller was with Kurt Vonnegut at a party hosted by a billionaire, right? Basically, Kurt was telling Joseph Heller that, do you realize that in one day he makes as much money as you did selling Catch 22 your entire life, right? And so Joseph Heller turns around to Kurt Vonnegut and tells him, I've got something he can never have, right? And Kurt is like, what on earth could that be? And Joseph Heller is like, the knowledge that I've got enough, right? Yeah. And this has been a sort of fascinating, recurring thought to me. By virtue of when we grew up and where we grew up, I think we've referred to this before also as sort of Indian middle class, which never had enough, right? Yeah. You would never leave behind a milkshake, even if it tasted horrible. And Nitin would never leave chicken on his plate, even if it's full. And he'd drink up the beer, even if he doesn't need it, because, you know, you've been taught not to waste, right? And there is no concept of enough that we've been taught, right?
Yeah.
Whereas what has happened as a function of how the job market has changed, especially in India, which is like looking very, very robust, at least for a certain set of people, is that now you can actually choose to say that this much is enough for me, right? But by and large, most people don't do that, right? Which has been fascinating to me.
Yeah.
So
since you mentioned that, right, I agree with you. It is quite strange. And this might seem very obvious, but the term work-life balance, right? I would imagine life is something that we're leading all the time, 24 hours a day for whatever, 70, 80, 90 years that we live for. But work is carved out from life as a, you know, a separate part of the day. Which is why you need work and life as two ends of the balance, not life and death balance, right? It's work, life. You're basically saying you're the moment you clock in during the day, you're actually ceasing to live, is what, I mean, if you extend that thought, that's what it means. Which is weird.
You're saying, if it's a balance, then both things are at opposite ends and not necessarily
A
continuum. Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's strange that the proponents of work-life balance are happy to carve out work as something that is outside of your lifetime or the time when you have quality to your life. But I fully agree with you. It's strange that people don't know what is enough and where to stop.
The analogy is basically back to your friend who is wanting to lose weight, is that you can never lose weight through exercise alone, right? The only way to sort of, if you want to lose weight, is to restrict the amount that you eat, right? Which is also the same formula to staying wealthy or having enough, is that you have a certain set of needs which do not ever surpass the income that you're able to generate. And it's always been fascinating to me that, you know, there is, at some point when we talk about like wines or something like that, and realistically, if wine experts can't tell the difference between a 500 rupee bottle of wine or a 50,000 rupee bottle of wine, we still hold on to this to say, oh, now I drink single malt, as if like it is some fascinating, fabulous achievement, right? You could still get the same high off the beer that you drank when you were in college. But it's seen as a marker of somehow some kind of progress, right? Not that alcohol is great or anything like that, but I'm saying that it's one place where you see the spectrum of how the same thing can be priced so very differently, only to appeal to a sense of status that shouldn't exist in the first place.
You can blame it on the consumerist culture around us, right? Needs are being created all the time for needs
by
and
marketers.
Want. By marketers, exactly. So you can always go back and blame Don Draper for all these facing the society. But yeah, that's what it is.
So one of my profs had this line. What is the difference between marketers and finance guys? He was taking a dig at all the finance people who had taken this marketing course, right? He's like, marketers create value, finance guys just add it up. So like most of what you see today is a function of marketing. Like some of it needful, some of it needless, but yeah, so it goes. If you are sort of on social media by virtue of the life aspect of work life, whether on LinkedIn or otherwise, you're constantly, consistently being bombarded with content that is written by people who, you know, have a need to be validated, right? I'm including myself into this whole thing.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, the smartest people or the wisest people are in a corner unto themselves, deciding not to say anything, right? Like Bill Watterson famously created Calvin Hobbes and walked into the sunset with the whole intention of like not having anything more to say, or like not letting people syndicate his work or create merchandise or create spin-off shows, etc., etc. Right? So that is, I mean, Flappy Bird thing is exactly that.
And he's fully, nobody knows where he is now, right? Like people have tried to find him, but he's leading a happy life in some corner of the world. Having said, I don't want to put myself out there or make any money from this wonderful IP that I created. So clearly, like Joseph Heller, someone who knows that he has enough, and that's good enough.
He did do a series of cartoons with the Pearls Before Swine guy, right? He actually drew comics for him and all of that. Yeah. But by and large, it's
by and large, yeah.
So the point being, if you are saying that there is that famous line, right? At the end of the day, if you win a rat race, you're still a rat, right? So maybe LinkedIn is not the best place to look for things like these, right? So when I said that my brother is probably like someone I would like to emulate, we also have our friend, Mr. Varun Murli, right, who took a 2-year break saying, I've had enough of work. And then he got back into it. And like, I think as of last count, he's also turned down like the offer to be promoted a bunch of times, right? And he's very clear that what success looks like to him is never having anyone reporting into him, right? which I feel like is a much better metric than some of the other things that we chase.
Absolutely. Another call out there. There was this recent episode of The Seen and the Unseen with Amit Verma, which featured Utsav Mamoria, right? Who runs this very popular slow travel podcast called Postcards from Nowhere, right?
Yeah.
And Utsav again is someone who, he was a colleague, not someone I knew very well or interacted with much, but we did overlap briefly at one of my workplaces. And he calls out in this podcast how his, very similar to, you know, your brother and Varun, he's also someone who is very clear that running after the next big promotion or hustling to go further up beyond a point doesn't actually make sense. And he leads a leads a slow and content life doing, you know, things that he's passionate about and being curious and everything. So, yeah, there are a few of these people around us. Famously, I don't know about Varun, if he's active on LinkedIn, or your brother. I don't think these guys, no. These people probably aren't the ones putting hustle bro content out there on LinkedIn all the time.
Yeah. No, I think Utsav had a great, again, like you mentioned, we have to, last time we promoted Everything is Everything. Now we have to promote lesser heard podcasts like Seed and the Unseen and Podcast from Nowhere.
We heard that Radio Lab, Radio Lab is now going viral thanks to all the plugs that we've been doing. This little known podcast run by NPR in the US for the last 30 years finally is getting some listeners thanks to us.
So Utsav had a good line in that podcast, which apparently his friend told him, right? Which is that zyada se zyada kya hoga? You won't become a VP, you'll end your career as an AVP, right? Yeah. Like, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so, we have to also call out these amazing designations that these companies have come up with now, right? In order to create the next level of the ambition. So there is vice president. A vice president itself is, you know, inferior to a president. Let's put it that way. And then you have the assistant vice president, which is like an AVP. I'm like, what does that even mean? Right? There were at one of the companies I worked with, there were actually four levels within the director cohort. Right? You start as an associate, then you become a manager, then you become a senior manager, then you become a deputy director. A deputy director sounds like a designation that you would see in the police force, but it was there in this company, in this e-commerce company. Deputy director, who later becomes a associate director, who then promotes to become a director, who then promotes again to become a senior director. You can spend 20 years of your lifetime continuing to be in this ladder, right? And these are like sub rungs within that ladder. From a senior director, you then become like a vice president. And then I don't know. Yeah. Then you update your LinkedIn and look for another job because there's nowhere else to go.
I can't believe we've had all of this conversation without giving a shout out to our original podcasting and board games and otherwise friend, Mohan Krishnamurthy. Who holds the current title? And I'm not making this up. You can check his LinkedIn. He is Associate Deputy Vice Chancellor at RMIT. Right?
No, yeah, I mean,
Associate Deputy Vice. Now, all of them mean the same, right? I'm like, we're not really making this up.
Not really.
What is the difference?
When we spoke, you remember that episode where we spoke about vegetarianism, right? We said there are these different classes of vegetarians, and there is this type of vegetarian who will only eat non-veg food when he is having a drink and when he is smoking. So an associate deputy vice is a vice that you will only have when you are also drinking alcohol and smoking. And associate deputy vice chancellor is otherwise chancilla. Yeah. Associate deputy vice has chance only when I'm doing all these other things. So, but yeah. Mohan K, one of the smarter, most erudite, wonderful people that we know. The joke is not on him. The joke is on the structures that we deal with in the corporate world. But
No, I didn't mean for it to be a chancellor paid dancer. But if you're sort of looking at another sort of person you can look up to and emulate, it is Hank, right? There was a time when he spent a significant amount of time in Bombay. He was setting up a research institute or one of those things with IIT Bombay and
That's a good way to put it. Research institute or one of those things.
Yeah.
What are the...
Yeah, except...
But on that whole designation creep thing, right? The best joke that I think of when I think of random designations comes from The Office. I don't know if you watch The Office, right? Which is, of course, a wonderful show. So there is this character called Dwight Schrute. Assistant to the regional manager. Because Michael Scott, played by Steve Carell, is the regional manager. Dwight Schrute claims to be the assistant regional manager. He keeps getting corrected. No, you're the assistant to the regional manager. But
amazing.
It's funny. Sometimes you laugh when you see, you know, the joke is actually on yourself, because I mean, I've been an AVP and, you know, all these ridiculous designations at different times in our life and craved to move ahead, right? Move to the next level because that's where the validation comes in, right? And then you laugh when you see these jokes on a TV show, not realizing that the joke is actually on you.
But, of course, the joke is on us. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, like I don't think there is any lack of self-awareness in all of this that we are in the middle of this. Right, but what one other layer that I wanted to sort of bring in was one of the other trends that is happening with our generation is this entire thing called FIRE, right? And FIRE actually stands for, what does it stand for?
Financial independence and retire early is FIRE.
Yeah. Financial independence and retire early. Okay. Financial independence.
It's a badly constructed sentence. Yeah. Like a designation of a typical corporate company.
Yeah, but this has been one of the other trends, right? But what I wanted to say was that there's this very small book by Viktor Frankl, which is called Man's Search for Meaning, right? And so when you weigh out work-life balance as a construct, and you're saying, you know, why don't you choose to embrace 100% life? The problem therein is that if human life is inherently meaningless, which it is, then you need meaningful distractions where you feel productive, right? Yeah. And actually, a corporate environment sort of, if you're able to find the sweet spot, gives you a place to achieve that, not necessarily validation, but feeling of being productive, of creating something good in the world, right? And therefore, retire early may not be always like the logical thing to do, right? Why? Because now you have to create entirety of meaning for yourself, right?
Yeah.
So why I mentioned Viktor Frankl was basically this was a dude who was sent to Auschwitz and had his transcript of the book that he was writing, or his whole construct was this thing called logotherapy, right? Which is logo stands for meaning, not the other logo. Logotherapy for like marketers would be, can you make the logo bigger? But Viktor Frankl's point was, can you make the logo bigger in your life? Like, can you, you know, have more meaning in your life? And he was basically saying that there are three places where you can sort of derive meaning from, right? Not happiness, meaning. He's saying happiness is incidental and it is fleeting, but meaning can be constructed. And he says there are three sources of meaning, really, right? One is someone to love. So how did you survive the concentration camp, right? Knowing that there was someone to love waiting for him and all of that is one thing. Another is the aspect of suffering itself is a good way to deal, derive meaning, right? Hard situations actually build character. So courage in difficult times is one. And actually the third one, which is the first one that he mentions, is work itself, right?
Mm.
And that actually can add a lot of meaning to your life. And therefore, while we sort of deride people who over-index on the corporate side of things, I believe like if you can... not necessarily drink the Kool-Aid, right? Like buy into it. It is a source of structured meaning, structured meaning for an appreciable period of time, right?
So, but what is validation if not structured meaning, right? So I agree with you, by the way. And all these mini milestones, right? The next promotion, the next bonus, all of these are basically steps on that ladder to getting the next ounce of meaning into life, right? So.
What I feel that corporates give you is the scale of feeling good because your company is doing so many things that you find meaning in, right? And also the ability for you to do things at scale, right? Like, for instance, you travel for work to X number of places. There are inevitably certain workshops and leadership programs created by HR. To sort of strategically invest in you, or like, you know, find ways of upskilling you or making you, giving you frameworks to sort of step up to the next level, right? And if you buy into it, you obviously sort of feel better than if you were sort of figuring it out all on your own. Right? So I feel there is certain value
100%,
there,
100%. No, and a lot of this then also boils down to how we behave as social animals, right? Think about the last time you met a new person, right? The typical opening line that people ask when they meet someone new is, so what do you do?
oh, what do you do here?
Yeah. And so, I mean, we're talking about fire and I can talk about this because I've not been gainfully employed now for coming up to 2 years, right? And in fact, the main thing
we
that...
We have gained from your ungainful employment.
Yeah. And because I had the opportunity to take a break because I didn't have the financial compulsion to continue to work. So I said, unless I find something that I'm truly, truly passionate about and enjoy doing, basically blurring the line between work and life, I would not actually do it. And I'd be the first to admit over my 14 years of corporate work, I don't think that I was in any job that really made me that happy that I would want to do it if it were not paying me a salary. Let's put it that way. Right. And so I've been in this stage now for the last couple of years where I've not been working. Right. And I find it tough to face people. And when they ask me that question, what do you do? Because I don't have a real answer. Right. I can't tell them. Yeah. I don't want to tell them I'm unemployed. But that's as true as it gets, right? Because it looks like I'm a loser if I say I'm unemployed. I don't want to say I've retired, which is also true, but I look old these days, but I'm not old enough to retire, or at least what people would think is old enough to retire.
If you're a sports person, you're old enough to retire, right?
So, yeah, but I'm not. So therein lies
I've
the conundrum.
I've retired from cricket.
Oh, you used to play? No. But I'm retired from cricket.
I just retired from cricket.
Now I've decided that I've retired from it. Yeah, so it's not an easy question to answer. And it hits my self-esteem, right? Each time I face that question, or obviously, I know that that question is going to come, I actually start squirming. And so, yeah, the joke is again on me. And for my lack of self-awareness, at laughing at LinkedIn bros, while I suffer from the same insecurities they do and deal with it I'm not dealing with it, whereas they're actually dealing with it in a different way, right? So,
my point is that if you chase meaning, you hit the same roadblocks that every human before you has come to, right? Yeah. Is one of our other friends, who I don't want to name, was that he was like consuming a bunch of philosophy, right? Like he was like going into everything. Everything that he could read about everything, right? And basically, it ended up to a point where he's like, you know, there is no point to any of this. And he went to a therapist. And she basically told him, stop reading philosophy, you should be fine. No, but so the point is that you do need stuff to distract you from going down the philosophizing rabbit hole, right? Because there's only one place that can end it, yeah.
On that note, the book that I'm currently reading, right, I have it here. It's related to everything. I don't know if you've heard of this book. It's called When We Cease to Understand the World. It's written by Benjamin Labatut, a monstrous and brilliant book. This was shortlisted for the 2021 Booker Prize, by the way. I don't read much, and I've been, I would say for the last 20 years, I've been struggling to try and rekindle a reading habit. I get into spurts where I read a bit and then I stop and whatnot. But this book was recommended by my wife. She gave me a list of books. This was one of them. It's about these genius scientists and, people like Albert Einstein, Niels Bohr, and, all those guys, Heisenberg. The one thing that is true for each of these people, and this book is written like narrative fiction, right? But it's all real life. It's about how these people came up with their breakthroughs, what was going on in their mind when they came up with these breakthroughs. Each one of them is actually a tortured soul, very similar to the example of the friend that you just mentioned, right? And they were all going through extreme turmoil in their mental, physical, psychological space when they came up with these amazing breakthroughs in the field of maths and physics. And this was their way of finding meaning, I guess, or maybe they got so close to actually finding meaning and they found it so scary that this is actually true. It was one of the scientists in this book was so scared of what he was inventing or what he was discovering about maths and physics that he actually stopped continuing to do his research. He said, the world is better off not knowing these truths. So, once you reach that level of realization, I guess it is hard. Yeah. Life is hard. The closer you get to the truth, life actually might get hard. So who knows? Maybe Bill Watterson also is currently struggling with existential questions that... good for
obviously
him. Happily ever after.
Obviously. Yeah. Since we mentioned Bill Watterson and how he did a thing with Stefan Pastis, right? Which is the guy who does Pearls Before Swine, right? And there is this all-time favorite comic of Pearls Before Swine of his, which I got converted into a comic featuring Emma. I replaced the pig with Emma, or Chuck did it for me. So this is basically it, right? Tree stump of deep thought that you're not usually capable of. No one knows what we're doing here. Some have faith that they do, but no one knows. So we are scared we are alone, and we end, and we don't know where we go. So we cling to money for comfort, and we chase awards for immortality, and we hide in the routine of our days. But then the night, always the night, which when it has you alone, whispers that maybe none of this has any significance. So love everyone you're with, because comforting each other on this journey we neither asked for nor understand is the best we can do. And laugh as much as you can, right? Which is also what we hope to do with this podcast and stuff like that, right? So I don't think there's anything deeper than that to be.
This is beautiful, right? Like, kudos to Chuck and you for putting this together. It's so special, so wonderful. But an apt summation of this is everything is bullshit.
Of course,
So
Laugh at everything.
Grab a glass, grab a plate, and join the party. Everything is bullshit.
The problem with corporate culture is that you have misaligned the incentives of the person with the incentives of the employee, right? And there is a, as you call it, principal agent, classic principal agent problem, right? If you think of why an award matters, realistically, like your friend who is trying to lose weight, it doesn't at all. Actual sort of tangible difference in the product or in the revenue or whatever you're chasing. And ultimately, business exists for profit, right? And you are basically trying to increase revenues. It doesn't come from winning awards. It obviously comes from making incremental changes. But the problem is that on average, if you're saying that 18 months is how much you should spend at a role, or maybe 2 years or whatever that period is, and then you want to get promoted or go into a different role, then you're automatically saying that there is nothing I can do in this period that will make me stand out, right? Like, I can make incremental tweaks, but how do I explain it to get to the next role, right? Therefore, you do the opposite of what is actually productive for a company, is that you define some sellable story moments, right? Like, you know, award winning this thing for that thing, or like this campaign won an award. So, I mean, what did it do for the business?
OKRs.
You
come up with OKRs to,
Who cares?
Who cares about your OKRs? That would be a wonderful name for this episode, wouldn't it?
No, but tell me, have you seen this phenomenon playing out in corporate culture?
Absolutely, right? See, it is storytelling, right? You want to move to the next level because you want to tell yourself. But why yourself? So that there is a story that you can also tell everyone else about who you are. The success in the life that you're leading, right? Because that's where your validation comes from.
Success in life.
Success in life. Going back to Chris Rikan. But for you, in order for you to get to that next level and to be able to tell that story, you first have to tell a story today, right? And how do you tell that story? You need bullet points to put in your story, right? And those are the mini milestones that you create for yourself, and to show that you're actually progressing somewhere and you are deserving of a bigger cubicle, a bigger team, a bigger salary, a bigger title, corner office, and so on and so forth. But everybody is in on the story. LinkedIn. Yeah, go on.
Obviously, it's again the LinkedIn phenomenon, right? So how do you know a person is doing their job well? It's probably as a, you know, someone who's supervising their work or as a boss, it's probably when you never have to get involved with them at all, right?
Like, yes.
But it also means when it comes to their evaluation, you're like, huh, I never like saw you this year.
No
like,
visibility.
Therefore, you must be doing badly.
You didn't have any visibility, right? And it's not even that I didn't see you, but the company has not seen you. So I cannot justify giving you a promotion because nobody even knows who you are, right? It's just like, whose fault is that? Like, I don't care if people know me or not. But it's all about the show, right? So there was this other tweet that went viral. I think it was at a hedge fund or something where they had this huge war room that they had set up with a lot of monitors monitoring.
This is what it is.
I think you had only shared this with me. right? Like, yes, it's showing some Dow Jones index, some tweets are flowing. There are like some 25 different screens over there, and you just come and you don't know which one to look at, right? And apparently some decisions are being made on the basis of this. I've been part of something very similar, actually a couple of times in my life. Right? So I can digging into the well of my wonderful corporate experience. I was working with an e-commerce company, which was running, which used to run this annual, biannual sale, which was their biggest sale event of the year, right? And the sale runs for 3 days, right? At a fixed time every year. The sale typically starts at midnight on day one, and then it goes on to day two, day three, day four. And those 3 days are this entire festival in the office, right? Everybody has to be there. The sale starts at midnight. I don't know why, because for some reason we wanted to keep our customers awake late into the night. But it starts at midnight. Everyone has to be there. The CEO is going to be there. The CXOs are all going to be there. And they have these big screens, right, with all number of sales that were done. You know, there's a live monitor, live ticker that is running, amount of revenue that has been realized, what the margin is, what is this, blah, blah, blah. Some 25 screens. They create this whole party carnival atmosphere in the office, right? There is a chocolate fountain that is set up. There is like food. There is Pepsi. Everybody has, you know, fancy coffee mugs, and they have whatever jumpsuits and jerseys that are given branded with the company. It's like the ultimate Kool-Aid party, right? That happens. And
Super Bowl, yeah.
It's the Super Bowl for the company. And then there are these people who, you know, they know that this is important, but they've finished their work. They aren't really involved in the work during this event at all. So they actually just want to go home for the weekend and rest.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, but I have to be here. You know, the CEO is going to be there every day, and I need to be there. Otherwise, they'd be like, oh, where is this person? He's not shown his allegiance to the company. On day two, the next morning, the media comes to cover this event. This is Bangalore, right? So e-commerce is huge. Right. So your story and all the other media houses like to come and cover these events. So the CEO would then give a walkthrough of the sale operations to people of the media, at which stage certain monitors will be turned off, the ones that are actually showing the revenue that you're clocking, etc., because you can't let media people see it, right? Like, for whatever reason. Yeah, because it then can potentially affect valuation or whatnot. So there's a huge huddle around, which are the monitors that need to be turned off now, etc. And this show just keeps going on and on, right? So same thing happened at a different company as well, where this was in a B2B context, where you're trying to bring clients to your office and show them, you know, how well you're running your product, so that they can be impressed and bought by it and also take your product on. So on a Saturday, where usually you have 10 people from the team that show up at work, because that is the amount of people you need on a Saturday, because you want to give people weekends off and days off during the week. But on that Saturday, you call all 100 people. Like, they all have to come and look like full on, you know, oh, we're all working. And again, your war room is set up.
Yeah.
What is with all these terminology, like war room, by the way? Like, why is war every room. Product manager a rock star? Rock stars and product managers are two phrases that don't go together at all. I'm looking to hire rock star developers. No, I'm not looking to hire rock stars as developers at all. Why am I setting up a war room?
What is a maven? What a maven is.
It's like a dynamic doyen. I don't know. Yeah, what is a maven? Yeah, it's one of those words. Yeah, like
when you talk about war room, there is that beautiful...
like, this is not war. You're not fighting. Nobody's dying at the end of this, right? At best, you're going to lose some money. Or you're going to make money.
Hopefully not.
Hopefully not. War room. Every company has a war room.
There's a beautiful scene from Dr. Strangelove where, you know, these two people are arguing.
Yeah.
And the character played by Peter Sellers walks in and says, "Gentlemen, you cannot fight in here. This is the war room." Some of these things are required to build that larger corporate meaning that can be passed on.
Exactly. Right?
Like, because at the end of the day, hard experiences is what sort of lends more meaning in that sense, as ironic as it is. Like, you're thinking of, if in the experience of the Chakde example, the time that they all got together, Chakde India, was when Shah Rukh Khan basically sort of became the antagonist, and like they all united in that thing. Right? So you have to sort of, if it doesn't already exist, create artificial situations where you know, people get to bond, and therefore it is not just about the money. It is also about the company culture and all of that.
We are family.
All of that stuff that, we're family. Yeah.
They are not, absolutely not family, man. Like, colleagues can never be family. You're born into your family, literally. You don't pass an interview to go and join your family. It doesn't make any sense. But
yeah.
So companies do all of this to create meaning for employees so that employees can seek meaning in their work and hence contribute to the company's advancement. That's the entirety of all the layers that we've built today.
Amazing.
In other words, everything is bullshit. Yeah.
And laugh. Laugh because everything is bullshit. Yeah. Who cares about your OKRs?
Yo.
Cool. I think that is the end of yet another episode of Leftover Lasagne. We shall not tell our listeners what episode number this is because you can read it in the title.
Yes. Hashtag Tala for a reason. Enjoy the rest of the season. And let your friends know about Leftover Lasagne and do leave us your feedback Twitter. We really loved the feedback that we got, and we are craving more validation. As we have said, we are searching for purpose in our podcasting lives. So indulge us, please.
Yeah. The reason we keep asking about, you know, if you like the show, give us a 5-star rating, is that it gets discovered by more people.
And even if you don't have anything nice to say about the podcast, you could always share it with a C4BR.
Oh, beautiful.
This episode is definitely going up on LinkedIn. We have to put this up on
mic drop. Yep, we can drop our mics officially at this point. So thank you for sticking with us. Till next time.
Bye.